Fellow writers, we are so happy to be sponsored by Author Accelerator, where you can train to become a book coach or be matched with a coach who can help you reach your writing goals. This is KJ, and I started this certification program this summer when I realized I missed my editorial work, but wanted to learn how to apply those skills to writers working on novels, not articles and essays. This program is absolutely everything you need to get started from the editorial, coaching, and business perspectives. It's also entertaining and inspirational and makes me want to leap in right away. Learn more at bookcoaches.com.
Is it recording?
Now it's recording.
Yay!
Go ahead.
This is the part where I stare blankly at the microphone. I don't remember what I'm supposed to be doing.
All right, let's start over.
Awkward pause. I'm going to wrestle some papers.
Okay.
Now one, two, three.
Okay.
KJ Delantonia,
and
this is Hashtag Am Writing, the podcast about writing all the things, short things, long things, pitches, proposals. This is the podcast about sitting down and getting your work done. And this week, we've got a great example of that. Why can't I finish my novel? So, this is KJ talking to you, and when I saw that heartfelt cry in the Facebook group, I knew we had to answer, because finishing a novel is hard. It's harder than starting. It's harder than showing up. There comes a moment in so many projects when, you know, you're going, you're moving, you're writing, but finding the words, the end, is really, really hard. And there are a bunch of possible reasons for that. So today I am talking to Ophir Lehavi. She is a coach herself. She works with students to help them find ways to get their work done. So she was totally open to me sitting down and helping her find a way to, she was fine with getting the work done. It was getting to the point in the work where she wanted to be that was the challenge. And I think everybody is really going to love this, especially if maybe you've been rolling your way through NaNoWriMo and you're trying to get to the end of that. Or if you're in the middle of revising something and trying to get to the end of that. This is basically a coaching call about finishing. So, in a minute, we'll head straight into the interview. I know you're going to love it, but let me just remind you that if you have a pressing dilemma in your writing life, we would love to hear about it. Email us at amwriting@substack.com. Can't promise to answer every email, although honestly we do tend to. But if we can, we'll answer the question. We might address it on a podcast, or we might invite you onto the hot seat and see if we can help you out in person. We love doing that, and we hope you love listening to it. Great. Well, on to the interview. Ophir, thank you so much for coming. Welcome to Hashtag Am Writing.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here. I'm excited to be here.
I think this is going to be so fun. So listeners, as I laid out a tiny bit in the introduction, Ophir has 78,000 words of a novel. That's enough. Like that, you know, if they were all the right words, and they probably are, many of them, the right words, they're just maybe not in the right order. They're definitely the right letters, which I think is, you know, that's something, right? So 78,000 words is a lot. And her question, which she posted on the Am Writing Facebook group specifically, is, I'm going to just read it. Ophir writes, I've been writing my novel for a very long time. Capitalized very. Different challenges keep coming up and taking me away from my writing, and I'd love to hear from someone in a similar challenge who overcame it. What's keeping me from getting it done, both practically and emotionally? Probably some fear of failure, imposter syndrome, / fear of exposure stuff. Any tips on how to balance work, kids, aging parents, and so on with writing, and the fear of exposure combined? Well, everybody, I saw this and went, oh, this is gold, because we all crash into this problem at some point or another. And it's the why can't I finish question. It's so huge that there's a dude who, John Acuff, I think is his name, wrote a whole book about Why Can't I Finish? He has another one called Why Can't I Start? Why Can't I Finish is actually, it's not called Why Can't I Finish. I will look up the actual name and put it in the show notes. I will make sure that it's really John Acuff, but I think it is. It's called Finish, subtitle something about finishing. And it's actually really good. I like to listen to it while I like move around the house or clean up. It makes a good, it's almost podcast-like. It makes a good listen. So recommend. But anyway, this is such a common problem. So I was so excited when Ophir agreed to come on and actually talk about what's going on. So you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. So first of all, I just want to point out to you how far you've come, because I searched the Facebook group for things that you have posted. And in 2017, you posted, "Love your discussion about just opening the document in this week's podcast. You are so right. I have a self-created writing goal and been kicking myself for not sticking to it. I blame sick kids, et cetera, et cetera. This morning, I opened the document and wrote." Okay, with 78,000 words, you must have opened the document and written a lot in the past 3 or 4 years, right?
Yeah, and I still use that. I still say to myself, open the document, and I work with students also, and when they're having a tough time, I say to them, just open the document. So that was a lasting message.
I love that that helped, but I also just want to point out, I mean, you took it and ran with it to the tune of a lot of time and a lot of words. So it's not like you're not going to figure out how to finish this. Like you're just at a stuck moment. So I wanted to talk about some of the reasons that that could be. But even before we do, I want to give people just a tiny bit of background I want you to give people a tiny bit of background on who you are and how you came to writing the novel in the first place. So what I like to ask is, a lot of us wrote as kids, but as an adult, what brought you to the page or screen at a moment when you were saying, all right, the words that I write now are going to be something bigger than a journal entry or an essay? How did you come to really tackle the idea of writing a book?
Well, there's a couple of pieces to that. The moment when I realized I wanted to write a book was back in about 2002, I moved to Israel for 3 years. This was after 9/11. And I figured, why not? You live life once. I've always wanted to live in another country. Let's just go do it. So I did it. And while I was there, I just found myself discovering things that I didn't even know about. And I was like, wow, this would make a great book. And so I decided not to take my real experience as fodder for a fiction love story, to make it something that people can engage with, not to learn about the Middle East through CNN or Fox News or whatever, but to learn about it through our own eyes, my own eyes, through a normal person.
Really American eyes, which is part of what I haven't read your whole draft, but I did look through it, and through really American eyes, right?
Yes, yes, yes. Very much American eyes. So that was where the idea for the book came. But what always kind of surprised me and shocked me about me as a writer was that when I was in fifth grade, my teacher told my mom, she probably isn't really good at writing because she's the child of an immigrant.
And ouch.
Yes. And so I guess ever since that moment, I've said, you know what? I'm going to show her. I'm going to show her, and I'm going to write, and I'm going to be a good writer.
We're on Zoom, and I just double birded that teacher.
Yeah, might be why I'm laughing.
Yeah. We could also send her a copy of L.A. Weather, which was the latest Reese Witherspoon book club selection, written by a woman, Maria Escondón, who didn't learn to speak English until she was 13 years old. And it's written, and she wrote it in English. It's not in translation. So come on, teacher.
Seriously, those were different times, I guess. But, that's something big to overcome when you're 10 years old. So
I love things like that, though. I think you definitely overcame it. But I personally find that super inspirational. I love that you're still going back to that Yeah, you tell me I can't, and I will, back I go every single time. Why? Yes, I can. Yes, I can. Yes, I can. So, but at some point you sat down and started putting words into a document that you had hoped to be this. When was that, and how did you make that choice?
I'd say family played a big part in urging me to do it. So when I was in Israel, I would write emails every day to my dad describing what was going on. And at some point, I'd already thought of writing a book about it. And at some point he said to me, this would make a great book. And just that acknowledgement that,
that you had something.
Yeah, that, you know, maybe I should write this thing. So I decided to take a night class on how to write a book. And back then classes were in person at the local community college. And I took a class, you know, how to write a book. And so I wrote my first chapter, which no longer exists. I wrote my first chapter and I said, okay, I've got a chapter. And then I found a reason not to do it. I think I saw Julia, and it was about Julia Child,
yes,
a blogger. So I decided to start blogging. And then I think I was writing my blog for years. And then I finally realized, you know what? I can't write a book and write a blog at the same time and have kids and work. So I decided to let the blog go and to focus on writing. So that was probably 2012. Mm-hmm. So I said, this was a long time.
No, that's okay. So the document that you have now, like, when did you first open that up?
So it started as that chapter from the community college class. And then I realized that the chapter from the community college class did not work. So when I moved to Florida in 2015, and suddenly I found myself with more time. I changed work and now I teach. And so I have a couple hours here and there. So whenever I have those couple hours here and there, I sit down and write. There's no structure to it. I don't have a plan. I don't have a writing routine. I know that would help me, but I just don't have it. And so I just open the document when I can.
Right. Okay. Well, so now that you're at this moment when you're feeling like I have 78,000 words, why can't I finish it? What do you do when you open the document?
Well, I review things that I've already written and edit them, mm-hmm, and try to make them better. Just the ending, I want to stick the ending. A lot of times when I'm writing, I just am so in it that I feel the emotions of it. And mm-hmm, I know that I've done something.
Right.
But then other times I'm just going with the motions, and with the ending, it's just not sinking for me. I'm not there.
So you aren't sitting down and writing new words. You're polishing old words.
I am.
Okay. That's important. That's good to know. So what's your goal with this? What do you want?
Well, I'd like
say
to
it out
finish
loud.
It.
Say it. Yeah.
I'd like to finish it. Okay. I'd like for it to be published. I'm afraid of it being out in the world. Even if one person reads it, I'm afraid. Mm-hmm.
So your goal is a pitchable, traditionally published novel or an independently published novel that you control? Which one? Or you don't have to know.
But I used to think it was traditional, but I've become more flexible in my thinking around that. I think I'm going to try traditional and see what happens. Mm-hmm. And if not, I'm okay with self-publishing.
So your goal is to have a draft that you can query agents with. And when they say, send me the first 5 pages, bam, there they go. And when they say, great, send me the full draft, you got it. That's where you want to be next, right?
Yes. You described that very well. Yes.
Well, because that's within your control. Like, you can get to that point. You may need help. It's going to take time, but you can get to that point. Like, you can't say, my goal is to have an agent. Well, great. But, you know, the agent gets some say in that. We're not allowed to just, you know, pick them up off street corners and put them in our pockets. They don't like that.
I guess one of the fears is that I've worked so hard on this and for so long that people aren't going to like it, and that I will have to, and I've heard you guys on the podcast talking about the amount of, it's still a first draft.
Yes, it is.
And when a first draft always needs to be revised. I know this. I tell my students that. You know, I know this factually, but it's just so exhausting to think about.
Well, I am getting the idea that what's happening when you open the document now is that you actually don't know what to do next. I don't think, you know, you said, help me find the time. It doesn't sound like, you know, it sounds like you know how to find the time. I mean, maybe you don't have an exact system. It's not like you get up at 5 a.m. and write from 5, 6, whatever. Just because somebody else does it that way doesn't mean you have to do it that way. You have a writing system that got you 78,000 words. So you can find the time, but it is doubly hard to find the time when you know deep down in your tummy that when you open that document, you do not know what to do next. Does that sort of ring kind of true? If it doesn't, it's okay.
Yeah, I guess it does.
Because, well, for a while you were like, I'll just write the next thing. And then I write the next thing. And then I write the next thing. But you've said you aren't sure how to do the ending. And given that, there, that moment when you have all the words that you knew you wanted to have, like that you know, for most people, honestly, it happens at 30,000 words. For most of us, it's like, I had this great idea and I wrote the beginning of a book and I don't know what to do with it next. Or, you know, maybe I know the ending, but I don't know what happens in the middle. That's sort of the more common moment for hitting that point. But, I think that's a really, my guess, and we can talk about like when you write and giving yourself permission to finish it, which is probably some of what's going on. But I really kind of think a great other thing to talk about to start with is helping you figure out what would be some of the next productive steps to take with these particular words. Like when you sit down next and you have 25 minutes. So if you had 25 minutes right now and all you had was this document in and whatever tool you need, when you opened it up, what would you do?
So you mean not fold the laundry?
Exactly. You're in your car in a tunnel. There's nothing to look at and the radio doesn't work and there's no Wi-Fi and you have the document and whatever you would, you know, in whatever form, like magically it has been printed out or it's in it, whatever would be the easiest form for you. It sounds like you would go in and make the words prettier.
Probably.
Okay. So I want to ask you, and can we talk about the book without really, like, we don't need to get into it. It's a story about a young woman traveling to Israel and experiencing a love story. I think that's all anybody needs to know. Is that?
That like, sums it up. Yeah, that's a good summary. Yes.
Well, but that is actually my question. So that's actually not a good summary. Like, that's a terrible summary. I mean, it is, but if that was all you could say about the book, and I know it's not, that wouldn't be enough. Like, no, very few, you'd have a few people who are like, yes, you had me at Israel love story. But most people would want to know, it's a story about a young woman discovering X and falling in love, or it's a story about, you know, Y and falling in love. So I guess my first question for you, and you don't have to answer it, is could you describe the core of this story in 1 to 3 sentences?
Yes.
You could.
I actually did write a short description. Is it okay if I read it?
I would love it if you read it.
Okay.
I just didn't want you to put you on the spot.
Oh. Okay. So Noah follows her dreams and moves to Israel to work at her ideal job and be with her ideal man. When faced with wars, bombings, and disappointments, Noah discovers what life really is all about and finds her true love where she least expects it.
Okay, so you know what you want, right?
Yes, I do. Yes.
And if I asked you, could you tell me like what the beginning of this story is and what the middle is and what the end is? Yeah?
I could. Yeah.
When you told me, is that the same thing you have on the page?
Right. So I broke it up into three parts.
Mm-hmm.
So the first part is about kind of the beginning where she's finding out the new land, where she's living, what's going on, where to eat, where to sleep, and just a lot of things fall apart around her. The second part is more of a path of self-discovery and getting to know her roots more and more wars and bombings. And, you know, I hate to describe Israel in this way. There's more to the country than that. But yeah, there were wars and bombings when I was there. So that did happen. And disappointments and things like that. And in the third part is kind of the self-discovery, where she starts to find herself.
And when in this, I read through it somewhat, and there's a point when she decides to become an Israeli citizen. When, in your mind, when does that happen?
Like, so after everything falls apart, she kind of has to pick herself up by her bootstraps and figure out what she wants. So that's pretty much when she decides to become an Israeli citizen.
So
she goes off on a little trip. Do you want me to practical?
No, I know
you?
She goes to, no, she, well, she goes to Paris.
She goes to Paris.
What I really want to know is that, so that is a big moment in your plot when she makes that decision. And what I'm wondering is that, so typically in a book you have a couple of turning points, right? You have the place where we go from the beginning into the middle. Like, so for, you know, to use the language of Save the Cat and all the other craft things, it's the inciting incident. And that could be a decision too. And so I'm wondering, do you think of her moment of deciding to become a citizen as, I don't think it's the inciting incident, but is it a middle turning point where everything changes, or is it like the end, like the big realization?
That's not the realization.
Okay.
So that's a middle turning point where mm-hmm. she goes further towards her realization. I think that, I think part of the challenge of my book is that I wrote it over a long period of time. And so it's choppy. So I probably could use a developmental editor on that. But I do see that particular point that you just talked about as a middle turning point.
So maybe you know, working with a developmental editor is definitely a thought. But when I just look at what you have and listen to you talk about it, I hear there's a difference in what you are. Like, I think you have a pretty clean vision for the story and you have a lot of scenes, some of which belong in there and some of which probably don't. So to me, a way to approach this next, besides going to a developmental editor, probably before going to a developmental editor, would be to peel it back to the essence of the story yourself.
Okay.
So I think you are editing words when you probably would feel better. I think you probably know on some level that you're editing words that maybe won't be in the final draft. So there's no reason to edit words until you have made some really important decisions about which things belong in the story. Because you probably only have 78,000 words. That's probably as long as this needs to be. And you have a whole ending still to write. And I do, by the way, my drafts are like 110,000 words. So this is a problem that I am familiar with. So making for yourself a really clean outline or picture or list of scenes, or and really that really focuses on who she is at the beginning and who she is at the end and how that change comes about, I think could really be a tool for you to then go back in and figure out which of those words and, you know, which of those scenes you really want. And to keep it at the beginning to just her story, which actually I think it actually is. I didn't see, I mean, I didn't read it in detail, but I didn't see a lot of extra, like, subplots or something like that. I feel like that might help you to, you know, get more of a handle on what you're doing. And I also feel, you know, I'm suggesting that as a next step, that might sort of give you some mojo for sitting down.
Okay.
Like if you knew, like, I am going to write down every scene that I have and what it means to the story, and then look at that and decide, you know, whether it belongs. It might be a good place to start.
A good decluttering.
Yeah, decluttering is a good way to put it. I always have to do this after a first draft. And I mean, there are other ways to look at it where you sit back and you read it and you look for red light issues and yellow light issues and green light issues. And I like that too. But you're at the first draft stage, you're probably still only at like big story issues. Like, do I have too many characters? And I'm not saying that you do. Do all the characters serve a purpose? Can I combine some of them? And I guess you talked a lot about self-exposure. So another question that I would have is, you said this was not an autobiography. It's not your story.
No.
I guess.
But it's based on things that I experienced.
Right. So I guess a question to ask yourself is the change that the person is, that the protagonist is experiencing, is it a change that you experienced? And if so, is that how you want to do it? Or do you want to maybe pull her back, you know, pull the two of you apart a little bit more? Yeah, you don't have to answer. You're like, I don't know. Well, because I think we all write the autobiographical novel.
Right.
And some of them are, yeah. Right. And some of them are great. And sometimes what it turns out is I want to use the things that I saw, but I want to tell a different story than I experienced. So, and sometimes it's, I want to write an, I like, I, and Alexander Chee's first novel, I don't know if you've read it, it is an autobiographical novel. And he has a great book called How to Write an Autobiographical Novel, which is actually a series of essays, of which only one is about writing an autobiographical novel. And yet it all is, it's kind of hard to explain. That would be an interesting thing to look at. So I think you need to, I mean, you talked about fear of self-exposure, and I think another stuck point for you might be how much of this is me and how much of it do I want to be me? And making a decision about, and I think it would probably, because you've also thrown a love story in there, I feel like, I wonder if you're feeling uncomfortable with, well, now everybody's going to think I had this love story. writing something that is deeply informed by those experiences that you had in Israel and setting it in that time doesn't have to be an autobiographical novel. You know, like, you can use all that stuff and all the things that happened, but the story of what happens to Noah, you can make anything up you want, right? And you kind of have. It sounds like you're like, but then people are going to think it's me, and it's hard for me to pull those apart. So I think you need to, you know, knowing how you feel about that might also be a way to get out of feeling stuck.
Right, right, right. Yeah, no, all good points. All good points. You are definitely hitting nerves there. Yeah, so it's so funny because when you decide that you want to be a writer, it's easier to write what you know first. And I started this novel based on things that I experienced. And then as I've kind of, as time has gone on and I've matured a bit and gone through some other things in life, I've been able to fictionalize more and more. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of the beginning's already been tossed out. But yeah, I guess certain scenes don't have to be there. You know, they really don't.
Not only do they not have to be there just because they happened, but things that didn't happen can totally be there.
Right.
Like you are the god of this. And, you know, if it would be funnier or more tragic or more dramatic, if X happens, you can make X happen. Or, you know, if it would be better if X doesn't happen, you can do that too. Like, you get to fix, this. And yet you have this great background for telling the story, which is kind of the perfect position to be in. You've got the scene and the feeling and the smells and the sounds and the emotions. But you can apply them to a story. This is not about the story that you're telling, because I just didn't get that deeply into it, but you could build a story that more enables you to tell the thing that you want to tell, which is how it felt to be in Israel as an American at this moment, and to shift, I'm just spitballing, but to shift how it feels to shift from an American mindset to an Israeli mindset, if that's what you want to go with. You can build the story that best enables that. You don't have to stick to anything.
Got it. I understand. So
in terms of timing, like in terms of time, are you having trouble finding those times to sit down and write?
Depends on the week.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely have a lot happening, a lot of stuff, but I guess if I can find time to sit on a podcast for an hour, I'm sure I could find time to sit down and write.
That's not very fair to yourself. The fact that you've been finding the time to sit down and write for so long just really suggested to me that maybe it's really hard. And I am in this space right now because I don't know what my next story is. It would be way easier for me to just sit down and start putting words on paper. That is a thing that I can do, and I know I can do it, and I can get to my goal, and yay. That the revision piece of it is so much harder to get a handle on, especially at the beginning when you don't know what you're revising towards. So, you know, what helps me is a checklist of small goals, like, writing my imaginary back of book copy, making a list of all of my scenes, making a list of what I actually have and what I wish that I had, you know, what I need, stepping back and putting the draft aside and getting some paper and writing an outline of what I think that I am writing, which often doesn't look like what I am writing. Those are things. And I feel like if you had a list of plans like that, then you'd be like, yes, I'm going to find my hour. I don't know. Is it sparking any mojo in you?
Yeah. I mean, it's funny that you said that because I don't know what to do next. And so I don't know how to declutter this book. So I guess I guess my next thing to do is to figure out how to declutter the book. So what stays and what goes? How do you determine that?
I think that, and this is something I do it, and I know other people do it too. I think that after you have a draft is the moment when you step back and you say, okay, what did I mean to write?
Wow. Okay.
Like what? And then it's not like you're throwing the draft away at all. It's just pulling back and going, what? And for me, and I'm going to send you this. I have Jenny Nash's book, A Blueprint for a Book. And it's got steps and I go back and do these after I have a draft. Some people do them before they have a draft, and that would be lovely. And I'm trying to do that this time, but I also do it after I have a draft. And I was just talking to Serena, who has, what, 36 books to her credit? And she is 50,000 words into another one and just texted us yesterday and said, I made a mistake. Like, I have to go back. And it's not like she needs to go back and rewrite 50,000 words at all. But there was like a fundamental thing about the relationship between her two characters that she realized, I've gotten this far and there's not enough tension and I need to go back and change this. And I'm like, well, I have 36 books. You're still doing it that way. I'm never going to get to the point of just writing a draft. And I think that the answer to that is why, yes, you're never going to get to the point of just writing a draft. Maybe some people do, but most of us don't. Most of us write a lot and then need to figure out what we meant to write and then go need to go back in and figure out, well, which, what of this is what I meant to write, and then start again or you know, move things around or pull things out or start a whole. Sometimes it's easier to start a fresh draft and just write along and then be like, oh, I already did this scene. Or sometimes it's revising is hard and it's a different, like you've gotten used to drafting, right? Yeah.
It's
and
fun.
Now you have to, it's, drafting is totally fun. And now you have to switch gears.
Yeah. Maybe that's why I'm a little stuck because I don't want to revise.
I think so. Because you don't know
how. I don't want to declutter.
I think it's not even that you don't want to. It's just, you don't, you know, you figured out how to do the other thing and now you have to learn to do a new thing. And that's really annoying.
It is. Yeah. It is annoying.
You know, if you want to set up some accountability for yourself, there are people, there's Tiffany Yates Martin has a revision class. I think Rachel Herron has. And by class, I mean, you know, it's $50 for a little cohort or whatever. And you can get in with those. I'll put those in the show notes, everyone. And there's other things out there. If you find one and you're wondering about it, you come into the Facebook group and ask somebody, probably knows, at least knows the person. Or like I said, I'll send you a blueprint for a book, but you can look around for others.
That's awesome.
There are guides to revising, and which Blueprint for a Book isn't, and yet it is. And sometimes just having those steps, even if you don't follow them exactly, it can just help, at least for me, it helps me put the energy, like shift from a drafting energy to a revising energy. And it gets exciting, I think. It's like drafting in a different way. It's like drafting with clay instead of drafting with nothing.
This is great.
Yay.
Yay. Yeah. No, this is great. I'm people can't realize this because we're on a podcast, but I'm sitting here taking notes and processing things. so you can't see that part. But I'm actually thinking to myself, okay, so if I had a to-do list of what to do now, that would make it much easier. And when I get to the ending, I'll get to the ending. I just want it to be really good.
Yeah. Well, I think
I want it to be tissue tear worthy. You know,
you want some, yeah, but you have decisions to make between now and then. And there's no problem. Like I can see, I went to the end just because you specifically mentioned the end and, you know, I can see where you're going and you know where you're going. You know, to even, and you don't even like, you sort of don't need to sketch it out because you kind of already did. And I think you can call this a draft, even though you're like, but it's not finished. It is. You have a draft. So I think switching to a revising energy, it's time. Like it's time for you to learn how to revise. Sorry.
Oh, this is a big moment.
Yeah. So it's time to move to that, because then when you get again, and it's only going to be a second draft. So it doesn't matter that it's the first draft of that last chapter. It'll, I think, save time in the long run not to try to write it now, to go ahead and get to it, but not to get to it by polishing those words. What you need to be, you know, you have a lump of clay now. You need to be figuring out where the head is and the arms and stuff like that. You're not carving fingernails yet.
Okay, got it. So
you'll
stop
get there.
Polishing words.
Don't polish words.
I've been doing a lot of word polishing for the past.
And that's a terrible, like, don't do that because then you get attached to them. But I mean, we all do it. We all do it. It's so much easier to polish words. But it'll be fun. Really, once you get into it, it'll be fun to figure out and to peel this back to the core story and to come up in, you know, to make sure that you have that through line that is pulling both the protagonist and the reader through that thing that she wants from the beginning to the end, or those wants that keep changing and evolving, whichever one, it'll be fun to find that stuff. And it really will. It's just a different kind of fun.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Yeah.
I get it. It's that time.
Okay. Well, are you ready? Can you talk about some good things you've been reading? Can we switch gears?
We can switch gears. Okay. So I have a theme in mind for the type of books I've been reading. I've been really into books about people who migrate and refugees and things like that lately. So I read a book, which I highly, highly recommend. It's called The Beekeeper of Aleppo by Christy Lefteri. Mm-hmm. And I'm just going to read the Goodreads summary. The unforgettable love story of a mother blinded by loss and her husband who insists on their survival as they undertake the Syrian refugee trail to Europe. I just thought that this book was great. It's, first of all, it's really well written. I read it so quickly. It was so interesting. And then at the end, I read a little bit more about the author. And the author was an NGO worker in refugee camps, I think in Greece. I'm not 100% sure, but I think in Greece. And so she actually witnessed a lot of what this couple went through, a lot of what this family went through. And so it just brought to life things that real people are going through around the world. And I thought that it was really well done. Another book that I loved, and this is by Isabel Allende. I'm a big fan of her writing. It's called A Long Petal of the Sea. So Isabel Allende wrote a whole bunch of books. She's been around a while. And so she wrote a novel, which is a historical fiction. And I'm going to read from the Goodreads thing again. This epic novel spanning decades and crossing continents follow two young people as they flee the aftermath of the Spanish Civil War in search of a place to call home. So this family, it's in the 1930s. I love historical fiction novels because I feel like I'm learning something while, you know, I'm being whisked away to another place. And so this family, they're living in Barcelona and Franco's troops come in and they have to flee and they go to Chile. And it's just really amazing. I feel like I'm learning something, but at the same time, you know, it's something, a journey, and it's magical.
Both of those sound amazing. Well, I'm going to pick up on your theme of immigrants and go in a completely different direction with it, because I just finished a book called The Donut Trap, which is coming out in early November, which is probably about when y'all will be listening to this podcast, maybe a little bit earlier than that. Or I might time it to like the end of NaNoWriMo. I don't know. Anyway, the Donut Trap is the story of a young woman who grows up in her immigrant parents' donut shop, because immigrating and starting a donut shop, that, I mean, that's a thing. Like, all over Texas, there are these donut shops, all over California, all over the place, because if you're an immigrant and you've come in and you've got family that have a donut shop, they can tell you how to do this. You can create something that Americans love and want and apparently need in every strip mall, but you don't have to speak the language to do it or sell it. So she grows up in her parents' donut shop, with parents whose expectation that she... It's actually a really interesting immigrant story because they are... I'm going to get the details of this wrong, and I feel a little bad about it, but they are not Chinese. They were actually refugees from either Korea or Thailand, and I apologize for not knowing my Asian history, into China before they immigrated to the United States. So they speak... either Thai or Korean, I've just forgotten, but also speak Mandarin. And they insist that their daughter only speak to them in Mandarin. So they have this whole language that she doesn't really speak. And there's a language barrier between parents and children that they never quite surmount it. So here it is. It's a fun, goofy romance called The Donut Trap about a woman trying to escape her parents' donut shop for something bigger. And yet, it is also this amazing immigrant story about growing up with parents who literally speak a different language. And I think that's why I sort of finished it going, why did I like this so much? Because the love story itself is, while it's great and charming, it's just a great, fun love story. It's that additional piece of the immigrant experience that really spoke to me. So
I just put that on my reading.
It's a totally different take on it. Like, there's no tragedy in this
book.
Yeah,
no, I love it.
And yet there is, because here are these parents who are separated from, you know, their past and their history and who are raising kids who literally don't speak their language. So I loved how there can be this tragedy in this comedy. And yet it was still a comic read. So
yeah, recommend that one. It's so relatable to anyone who comes from an immigrant family as well. So
it really is.
Yeah.
And the immigrant family romance is, I mean, there's so much, out there. It's a lot of fun. It's like, it's a fun genre to dive into. We talk about a lot. All right. Well, this was fantastic. Thank you so much for coming and letting me, like, you know, drill down and drag all this stuff out of you and talk about your book so publicly. I hope listeners are going to really appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much for, I feel as though I've been coached and I feel like I have some things to do now with my book, which is very exciting and I'm more excited to do it. And I really appreciate that you had me on today. I do. So thank you.
Great. Well, listeners, this is what I suspect will be the first of, you know, I don't know, many, a few, some coaching episodes that I will do or Jess will do or Serena may do, where one of you has a question that we think applies to a lot of you and it's worth coming on and getting down into it. So if you have a burning question, email us at amwritingpodcast@substack.com. And, you know, we can't promise to answer them all. Some questions we'll answer on the podcast. Sometimes, though, we will reach out and drag you on if you would like to be dragged on the way that Ophir has agreed to be dragged on. So, you know, send us an email. We would love it. Or if you have a question that would be best answered by a bunch of other writers, hit up the Facebook group. That's Am Writing Podcast on Facebook. Easy to find. And can I just say again, if you like the podcast, we love it. If you rate it, review it, and more importantly, hit that share button and send it out to somebody who needs a podcast like this one. That's it. Until next week, keep your butt in the chair and your head in the game.
Hashtag Am Writing podcast is produced by Andrew Perella. Our intro music, aptly titled Unemployed Monday, was written and played by Max Cohen. Andrew and Max were paid for their time and their creative output because everyone deserves to be paid for their work.
Thank you.